Welcome back to Hoops HD, everybody. It's Monday night, February 13th, 11:09 p.m. Eastern, and this is the Hoops HD report with a almost full cast here. I'm your host, Chad Sherwood, joined up top by David Griggs and John Stalica. In the center square, we've got John Tytel. To his side,
Alf.
David Dorman, Matt Zukowski. On the bottom row, we have Shadow Stevens, Alf, and Joby Fortson. Okay. I just dropped something here. But another great start to the show. But anyhow, this is the Hoops HD report. We've got a lot to get to, but
You said that already. We know it's the
okay.
Hoops HD report, Chet. I'm
We
just
gotta
glad the
start.
buzzer isn't working this week. The buzzer's not working. Oh,
It's back. Yes, we have our buzzer working.
what?
That important things here. Now, let's see here. As I'm losing my headset and everything. Okay. Now, but in all seriousness, before we get to the power conferences, which was what we normally discuss on this program, there was stunning news over the past week, less than a week or so, out of New Mexico State, where the New Mexico State Aggies accusations have come out of significant hazing by players against another player, ended with the school actually putting the entire coaching staff on administrative leave. The Board of Regents is actually meeting tomorrow and likely to terminate the entire coaching staff. The basketball program has been shut down for the rest of the season. The last six games they've played have been declared forfeits for conference purposes, no contest for the NCAA purposes. This was the dominant powerhouse in the Western Athletic Conference, and now they've gone to absolutely atrocious what happened here. And Dorman, I know you follow a lot of the under the radar schools. Any thoughts on this? What's come out here in New Mexico State?
Like you said, Chad, this is a terrible situation. I am going to hold my thoughts and comments. I want to hear what really happened and what's going to come out. I don't know if anyone really knows the story or what how bad this really is. I got to think it's absolutely terrible because to halt the basketball program and operations so quickly and is obviously there's a lot of bad stories about to come out. So I will hold my opinion to see what really comes out, but I feel bad for the kids again that had nothing to do with this, have put their heart and their soul into going to school and becoming a basketball player on the collegiate level. And then because of a few jerks, the whole program gets shut down. So when you're on a team, you know, that's how it usually goes. But let's see what happens. Let's see what comes out. But I do feel bad for the kids that had nothing to do with them.
Yeah, but I have all they did release a redacted police report. Obviously, this is what one person's version of what happened is, but the redacted police report said there was at least three kids that did it to another kid while other teammates sat by and watched and did nothing. Does the coaching staff know? Tytel, this is the same coaching staff that was sort of accused of covering up the gunshot thing involving Mike Peake back in November, and not really being fully cooperative with the police in that, and now you have this where they may have been overlooking, may possibly have been overlooking knowledge of what was going on in the locker room.
That I think actually is the most amazing part, Chad. Like they had a player on the team kill another guy. Like I think it was justified, which is why like he's not like in prison, like on death row or anything. But like I remember somebody or some buddies on this panel thought they would end the season then. I'm like, I laughed. I did. I'm like, no. Like this is college basketball and billion-dollar revenue and blah blah blah. And then like this happened, and they're still coming out with the facts, like Dorman said. But like, if half of it is true, like. They're holding a guy down and pulling down his pants and like hitting this and pulling this and slapping this. Like it's atrocious, as Chad said, and there's no room for it in the sport, much less society. And I don't know whether to blame the coaching staff. Like, should they have known? Did they know? Did they, if they covered it up, shame on them, and they should all be fired, of course, and maybe even worse. But if they didn't know anything, like, I feel bad that you have a situation where you have a player subjected to this horrific torture, for lack of a better word, who's not able to tell his coach, hey, like, this is happening, help, help, help.
Yeah, and maybe it's just that even if the coach staff did know, why is there an atmosphere where this kid had to hide it since August is what he said it started, or what we're hearing it started. And Griggs, I know you don't have the puppet on the screen right now, but did you have any
Right.
thoughts on this here? Where we've got, by best of my recollection, outside of what happened with COVID, I think this is the first time I've seen a team shut down a season early since for 20 years ago when the Bonnies did, because the team voted not to play anymore when they found out one of their transfers had a welding certificate instead of an associate's degree.
Instead of an initial, yeah.
I love that was a funny story. This is not.
Right. So I totally agree with what David Dorman's approach of not making a judgment call or pontificating until we know more. What I will say is more or less in general, I think that this needs to serve as a wake-up call across all of college athletics. I would say nearly, if it's not every single college team and every single sport, it's nearly all of them that have certain rites of passages. And if you don't know what they are, if you're an administrator or a coach in the school and you don't know what they are, know that they exist. And I think some of them are not only harmless, but actually kind of interesting. I know that I would have rather gone through something like that than not, but what I went through wasn't degrading. What is it Baylor does? And this isn't an athletics thing. I think it's the entire student body. They call it the Baylor slime. All the freshmen go through it. I think there's a big difference between that and a heinous crime, which is what they called this hazing, but what it really was a sexual assault. I think it goes on, if not this specific way, I think it goes way over the line way more often than what schools realized. And when it does happen, they might not even realize that it's wrong. How you might say, how could the coaches and players sit there and watch that and not intervene? Maybe they did. I mean, if that's what that's normal to them, if that's what's always gone on with that team, this ritual of pulling someone's pants down and smacking their ass in front of everybody else as everybody else laughs, that there's a big difference between that and like something like the Baylor slime. And I really think and hope that coaches and administrators at all colleges kind of get a handle on what some of the rites of passages that are going on at their school. Because my only thought, that's a lot of words for me to say that I don't think this is as isolated as we would like to think.
Right. I mean, I have heard from former New Mexico State players who have come out and said, no, there's nothing like this when we were there, all the way up through just 2 years ago. So is this something new or was it something back then? I mean, these are all things that have come out, but we do need to move on here.
And unless if it is true, I want to applaud the people that came forward, because I don't think I would have had the courage to do it if something like that happened to me.
And actually applaud the school administrators for just shutting everything down, saying, that's it. We're not even going to play games with this at all. We're not going to cover this up. We're going to be transparent. This is a team that's on its way out of the whack into Conference USA next year, a school at least, that is. Let's get to some more fun stuff here, and let's go to one of our old favorites that we like to start these shows off with, and that's blind resume time.
Woohoo!
And Matt, you haven't been with us for many of these blind resumes, so let me start with you on this. I got a pair of resumes here. I know you're probably like the team on the right just because of the metrics, but when you look at these resumes, which one is better? Matt, are you there?
Yeah, I know. I'm here. I'm debating it, Matt.
Okay.
It's fairly close to what, man. The team on the left are way off of the predictives, so that's why I give it an edge. But like, I wouldn't have probably the team on the right that much farther ahead than the left on my seed curve. And who knows? Maybe I wouldn't at all if I really did win out for tonight. But yeah, I still slightly lead on the right, because I mean, it is still 4 quad 1 wins each. I know the one on the left does have road one at number 3, which is pretty remarkable. That alone might just put him in the tournament, even if they predict not being that great.
And Joby, let me ask you as well. Your J&G has these teams almost neck to neck. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on these two resumes? Would you go right or left here? Especially, I mean, the right, you've got 3 losses out of quad one. You don't have that on the left.
Yeah. The tier 3 at 100 is very it's not the end of the world, but as being your bad one, and I actually the neutrals and aren't great. It's so tight. I mean, there's a reason why the J&G, and I don't know who these teams are, 22 and 24, which is kind of good. Not knowing more, I guess I'd go with the team on the right only because, A, the J&J is 2 points higher. But the other reason is I look at that conference record, and these are clearly both major conference teams. And so this team on the right might be right near the top of their conference, might be looking at a chance at a regular season crown, which I think does matter to me a little bit. And but it's tight. I mean, you almost have to fill in who are these road neutral home wins or one of these counterfeit, you know, for instance, that we just don't know. It's a great tight competition here.
Well, just throw both a little more information.
Clearly NCAA tournament teams.
Yes.
Clearly also, I would say, wearing white, but not a protected seat.
Yeah. I'll throw one other piece of information here. The team on the right is in the top 25 this week. The team on the left is not. Titel, does that surprise you that these resumes look close enough that maybe they should both be ranked?
Yes. I mean, the record is close and the strength of schedule, although non-conference strength of schedule is not. I wanted to point out, as I did, I think, a week or two ago, and give it back to Chad. Can you remind the viewers what that luck metric is? Because that seems to be the biggest discrepancy in the two.
There you go again.
Chad, I'm noticing one other thing. So I think I know the team on the right.
Yes, I do now winning, too.
Eight game win streak.
Yeah, ranked. Crazy.
I know who the one on the right is. It's crazy.
And I think Dorman, you have guesses. I think. Well, first of all, the luck metric, by the way, that's a KenPom metric. Your actual record versus what your predictive record should be. I think it was the same team we were discussing it with last week. Also,
yep. Exactly.
Dorman, I think you nailed the team on the right. How about who's the team on the left?
Creighton isn't ranked.
Creighton is the team on the right, and that is the ranked team. Yes.
Oh, okay. I had it.
Creighton's on the right. I'll take a shot. Maybe Illinois on the left.
Let's Stalika, you got a guess here?
Talking about the team on the left, I'm going to say Illinois.
I'm surprised.
Is it Rutgers?
No, it's not Rutgers. The team on the left just picked up that number three road win just this weekend.
God,
one of the games.
No, it's not Mizzou. It's not Mizzou. Oh, no.
They beat Illinois.
Oh, and they beat Illinois as well. Yes, it's Missouri on the left, Creighton on the right. And is that a bit of a shock that these profiles look fairly close, actually? An unranked Missouri team, a ranked Creighton team.
It is, but who didn't have Mizzou shoot up their seed list after what they did this weekend? It just goes to show you how one win like that, albeit that win bigger than most, can really change the entire complexion of a profile. And let me ask you this, what would it look like without that? They wouldn't be similar at all.
Well, we could put my hand. I don't know how to. we cross. But you do look at the Missouri, and there's nothing bad there. Also, which you know, even Creighton has some bad stuff on this profile. That Nebraska home loss, particularly. Let's start off with that Missouri win at Tennessee, and Joby. That win, And honestly, I think maybe both of Tennessee's losses this week is where we got to start, because they just found ways to miss free throws and cost themselves a pair of games here.
I mean, the Missouri game, Missouri showed what they've done throughout the year. Yes, this is, as Greg's point out, it's their biggest win, but they do have other wins down there. They're a solid team. You got to take care of business down the stretch, and Tennessee didn't. It's the Vanderbilt game that I scratched my head at. It's like, come on, because that's not an in-state rivalry from a realistic standpoint. It's not one of these games like Kansas State where they're at each other's throats, you know, and all of a sudden weird things happen, or the Auburn Alabama game, which give Bama credit on that one. Tennessee needs to get right, because what they did is Tennessee in many circles was looking at a one seed. That, you know, there's three teams that everybody kind of was settled on a one seed, and Tennessee was one of the teams thrown out by this group and others as, hey, let's think about them on the one line. That talk's done. That talk is done and maybe done for the year without them going on a ridiculous win streak. Now they need to ache and scratch and fight just to stay on the two line, because two and three are getting really tight around there with those Big 12 teams, Virginia, the Musketeers, You know, there's a lot of three and two teams fighting it out, and Tennessee better watch themselves.
Yeah, and Matt, when you look at Tennessee's upcoming schedule, Alabama home, at Kentucky, at A&M, South Carolina home, Arkansas home, at Auburn. They got a killer schedule the rest of the way.
Yeah, and add to that, A&M, Arkansas, and Auburn, and Kentucky, four of those six are playing for their tournament lives to one extent or the other. Maybe Auburn and Arkansas not as much, but still if things went slippery for them, they're not locked into the tournament. If they went on bad losing streaks, they'd fall out of the bracket. So that's not a schedule I'd want to play down the stretch, because those are four teams that could be super motivated.
Is this just I really think they should have buried Vanderbilt, but at the end of the day, it was two situations to where with less than 10 seconds to go, Tennessee was up two with the ball on the free throw line, and they managed to lose both games. That is almost statistically unbelievable. It's like two jackpots in a row. But part of me thinks, is Tennessee getting March out of the way in February? Because most of the time we see them fall in the NCAA tournament like this.
Still the coach, Griggs. Yeah. Rick Barnes still the coach. No. Because he'll still be the coach in March.
Okay. Let's talk about Stalica. Alabama now is the new number one team in the nation in both polls, one of only three teams along with Oral Roberts and Eastern Washington that are undefeated in their conference. They had a nice week with wins over Florida and at Auburn.
And don't be fooled by the final score. They had to fight tooth and nail to get the win at Auburn. If they can get the win at Tennessee, their road widens quite a bit to potentially go 18-0 in the SEC. They'll have a couple traps, and one trap at home against Auburn, and then the final test would be a trip against Uncle Buzz's crew at Texas A&M should they be able to survive at the point. My gut tells me they'll probably slip up along the way. If not Tennessee, then probably a surprise loss at home, because as we've pointed out, there's going to be a number of teams that are going to be fighting just for survival right here, namely Arkansas and Auburn.
Yeah, and Dorman, another team that is now clearly fighting for survival is Coach Cal's Kentucky Wildcats. Another head-scratching loss, this time at Georgia.
I was very surprised by that one. I thought they were playing for their tournament lives already, and they would be ready for that Georgia game, and instead Georgia took it to them. So now they find themselves going to Mississippi State and home to Tennessee. Like Matt said, they're playing for their tournament lives. Every game is going to be huge from here on out. I have them on the outside looking in today.
And how about Mississippi State, Tytel? This is the team that you were on board with them about 3 weeks ago before anybody else was. And I see that I looked at the bracket matrix this morning, and I think they're on the cusp of making the field there. And I think you've had them in for the whole ride now, five wins in a row. Yeah.
I'll take the credit. It's been a roller coaster of a season, to say the least. Started 11-0, then lost 8 of 9. So I understand why everybody gave up on them, but bounced back in a big way. They've won five in a row. They beat TCU at home. They beat Arkansas on their road. They host a little team called Kentucky on Wednesday. And at this point, I think you'd have to say they're favored over John Calipari, which I don't know if we've ever said before. I have them as my very last at-large team inside the bubble.
If you look at their remaining schedule, other than that trip to Missouri, everything's winnable. It's kind of funny to include Kentucky and winnable, but everything's pretty easily winnable, I think.
I would agree with that, and there's enough good on their resume to where if they can hold serve the rest of the way, I do think they get inside the bubble. I kind of wanted to go by – this is a hugely important bubblicious game they've got with Kentucky coming up on Wednesday, and – one of the things about Kentucky, I know they have the win at Tennessee, but it's one win out of about 15. It's not as many as that, but they've had chance after chance after chance after chance, and they got one of them. Kentucky has the opportunities. The question is, are they good enough? Because Oregon State also has the opportunities, and Louisville has the opportunities. I mean, is Kentucky actually good enough to make this field?
And Chad, one thing I will say, Mississippi State is only on 22 of the 86 brackets in bracket matrix, but three of those brackets are the Hoops HD consensus from Thursday night, John Tytel from this weekend, and this morning's JNG. So, and I think all three of us are right.
Do we have on that thing?
I wanted to give Tytel a shout out because just 3 weeks ago when he started putting the field, there was only one bracket matrix person.
I agree 100%. Tytel deserves a lot of credit. Yeah.
You saw this coming. Absolutely.
We have three brackets on the bracket matrix?
Wow. Yes, we do.
You will join. You will see more people roll it in. I mean, but it is remarkable how ahead of the curve, Tytel being the tip of the spear, but also the hoop stage. And even, I don't know if they'll pick up Griggs's bracket from this morning, but that if they do, and include it in the bracket matrix tomorrow, that will be four hoops HD related things. That
well, if they pick it up, they didn't read the note about how it wasn't intended for the bracket.
Okay. Let's move on here. Here's the upcoming schedule. There's actually a lot of good games in the SEC this week, beginning with Missouri at Auburn tomorrow night. And then Wednesday night, the huge one is Alabama at Tennessee. But by the way, you got Arkansas at A&M. And by the way, you got Kentucky at Mississippi State.
That is massively important.
Night, Wednesday night. Then Saturday, also, you got Tennessee at Kentucky and, you know, among
Texas A&M Missouri, like I've been beating Texas A&M's drum. Now's their chance to make me look like the genius that I am. I really
it's
hope Uncle Buzz has a week
Arkansas
this week.
On Wednesday as well. This is a big week for Texas A&M.
Yeah,
huge.
Yeah, this team really could use some. While they've have a lot of wins, they need some high quality tier one wins, and this is a pair of chances.
Well, they got five of their next six.
Yeah,
pretty strong games. So.
If they win all those, they should be fun.
Yes, I think they would be. Let's jump over to the Big Ten Conference. And Matt, let me start with you here, where we saw yesterday, actually, Purdue suffer their third loss of the season now when they go to Northwestern in a game that I thought they were kind of controlling most of the way, even though not pulling away. And then things just fell apart.
But I sort of considered going to this game because actually I'm not too far from Northwestern's campus, but ticket prices were fairly high, so I passed. But man, one for the Northwestern program, I said that pretty close to locks up their bid. But Purdue now, they're still, I think, pretty solidly on the one line, but it'd be time to start teetering here and keep that three in the loss column, not make that 4, 5, and 6.
Yeah, and Griggs, how much does Purdue doesn't have much margin for error left if they want to remain on the one line? Do they with these, especially with these remaining games,
right?
All games that they should win.
Yeah, and I think that's it. The reason the margin for error is small is because these are just Maryland's probably in the field, Ohio State is, and Indiana is, but you got them at home. Whiskey, I don't know what the hell happened to you them. And Illinois, while good, is not exactly road. It's not, they're not a road titan. Purdue should be favored in all those games. I think if they win out, they stay on the one line for sure. But the key is, I think they're good enough to win out. And I know that I sound like a broken record. While I thought they would win at Northwestern, I think the game at Northwestern was harder to win than anything they have left, minus maybe the game at Maryland, but probably not even that one.
Right. Dorman, you are a Chicago guy, a Chicago area guy as well. Northwestern there on the left.
What a profile.
I'm shocked they did not make the top 25 this week. Just missed on both polls, but I thought this would be a ranked team this week.
Me too, especially after everyone saw him beat Purdue yesterday. But I couldn't be more impressed with what Chris Collins has done with this roster. We sat here in the preseason, and I consider this group highly educated in college basketball, and none of us could make a case for them to even be in the middle of the Big Ten. Like, I thought this team was doomed from the start. They lost their guys to Duke and North Carolina with Nance. Chris Collins has done an incredible job. They really control the game. And the guards do a great job of slowing it down, getting the ball to the right guys in the right hands. They played a great D yesterday against the big guy, Edney, down low in Purdue. He got his points, but they were limited. And then when he looked to pass, they didn't have the guys open in the corners and the side, wide open for three. And that didn't get Purdue going and kept Northwestern in it. And has done what he's done all year. He's clutch. He takes the right shots. He plays hard-nosed D. I couldn't be more impressed with what Northwestern has done. And I'm with Matt. I think that clinched it yesterday. Unless they go for a total nosedive, Northwestern's going dancing.
All right. And take a look at the rest of the conference here. Tytel, I think you had some comments on Illinois here, sitting now among this logjam of teams with five or six losses. There are eight of them in the league right now.
Logjam is a good description, Chad. The Illini have won 4 of 5 with only a 2-point loss at Iowa. What's more amazing, they've been doing this since super fresh Sky Clark took a leave of absence from the team in early January. So they're a man down, but they're not. It's not costing them. The free throw shooting and 3-point shooting are going to cost them eventually. They're both around 300th in the nation, but the defense is keeping them in it. Iowa is a 6 seed. 6 of their 7 losses are to teams solidly inside the bubble. And I can't think of too many other teams with a pair of wins as solid as their neutral site wins over UCLA and Texas way back in non-conference play.
Yeah, without those, it's a very different look at profile, I think. But that really does a lot here. Joby, one of Illinois' wins this week was against my Scarlet Knights, where they put together a 300-0 run in the second half, I think it was, to turn what had been a narrow Scarlet Knight lead into a almost was a blowout win and ended up being 9 points. But Rutgers, off of an 0-2 week, any cause for concern here? Should I be worried?
No, I actually well. Ask me after this week, because you guys need to take care of business. You know, if you lose to Nebraska at home, yeah, you better be worried. But if you lose to Nebraska home, I think we all can agree that you should be worried. But I think Rutgers still has a wonderful resume. The road, you probably have the best win in the country, maybe, with the road win at Purdue, you could argue. And now that road win at Northwestern, I think you're going to get a lot of credit for that. So this home court hero Rutgers stuff, I'd like to push to the side. And you know, hey, people even look at the Temple loss and say, well, they also beat Houston. You can kind of get around that. Rutgers is not just solidly in this field. They are in the top half of the field. These losses probably cost you a run for a protected seed, but you're kind of the drop off around the 6-7 spot is so stark when you do your brackets, and Rutgers is on the good side of that 6-7 drop off. And I don't see them, barring a 2-game losing streak to Nebraska and sinking Wisconsin, you know, I don't see them falling to the bad side of that 6-7 chasm.
Yeah, I mean, they've played well for first half of the game, even longer without Mawat Mag, who's gone for the season. He's a really good defensive player too, but they've got a lot of good defenders. I think we got to overcome that. And I get the home court hero thing as well. But if you look at the road games, every single road loss was to a tournament team, except for the Ohio State loss, which is a game they should have won, but the officials screwed it up. These last three road games, at Wisconsin, at Penn State, at Minnesota, that's where you got to prove you're not a home court hero.
Right. And, Chad, when you look at the games that Rutgers has left, and you look at minus maybe the Ohio State, like, I think that the games that they've lost are not as hard to win as what they have left. Especially, I would say going to Wisconsin is hard to do, but not recently. God, Wisconsin stinks.
This conference is very easy to see the bid line. It's based on you have a winning record minus Michigan, probably. Yeah. Or, you know, I mean, it's literally top eight.
Right
there.
They're
in, and they're probably comfortably in. If you're not in that top eight, you are out right.
Well, Stalika, Michigan, the 1-point home loss to Indiana, did that doom this team, or is there still hope for the Wolverines, who we were just starting to look at last week?
That may have exhausted their margin for error right there. Let's not forget, they still have Central Michigan hanging like an anchor. Eastern Michigan came pretty close to being another anchor right here. The Arizona State game is starting to get worse and worse by the day, but the other problem is it's just too many tier one losses and wins for the Wolverines.
Can we also talk about the North Carolina Kentucky losses looking pretty bad these days too?
Those were losses to teams on the bubble on a neutral floor. Like, if you can't beat a bubble team on a neutral floor, then does that mean you're a bubble team or you're below it? So I know you said that kidding, but you might be on to something.
Here's the upcoming schedule. And as every week, there's a lot of interesting games here, including what do we got? Purdue at Maryland. We've got Illinois at Indiana, Michigan State, Michigan, Ohio State, Iowa, Northwestern.
Indiana at Northwestern. Yeah, that's Wednesday night.
Yes, I missed that one. Thank you, Dorman.
Yeah.
Huge by Wednesday night.
I think this is also the kind of week right here where our colleague Kyle Lamb starts to research Chris Holtmann's buyout.
Kyle Lamb, big Ohio State guy, yes. Let's jump to the Big 12 conference, where as we record this right now, there's a pair of Big 12 games going on with Baylor up on West Virginia and Texas up on Texas Tech in close games. So we can't really comment on those. See here, Matt, why don't we start with you at the top of this league here with Texas and Kansas, because I tell you, this was almost my blind resume for the day here, because I don't know which team is better here right now.
They're both strong. Right now, I think they're both kind of stuck at the top of the two line, but I think there's a decent chance one of them finds their way to the one, out of whether it's maybe Houston stubs their toe at Memphis to knock them off, or if one of them does the double, do they get to the one line? But yeah, that's where, like, they're probably 5 and 6 right now on the S curve. But
yeah, but when you look at these teams, at Joby especially, when you look at them, the losses look identical, quite honestly.
Yeah.
Now, Texas has maybe a little more in the 1A, but Kansas's 1B is even better, is really, really good.
Kansas's raw wins are the best in the country in just total numbers of wins against tournament teams. I mean, no one can equal what they've done. The key is Texas right now, and this is why I give Texas the advantage. Texas is in first place in the Big 12. If they because they're in first place, yes, uneven schedules, all that, but it's an even schedule at the end of the day. If Texas maintains that one game lead and then wins this thing, I think they're a one seed. And yeah, maybe it's at Houston's expense. Maybe it's a Purdue that loses two or three more or whatever. But Texas, I think, will have earned their way on. Likewise, if Kansas takes that slot and gets the number one seed going into the Big 12 tournament by beating Texas again, thus leading to a sweep, then Kansas should be looked at as the one, because this is too good of a conference with 6 teams as protected seeds, solidly as protected seeds. I've never seen anything like it. 8 out of 10 that are in and feeling good about being in with West Virginia and Oklahoma State's run. Gotta love this league. And if you win it, and you win it solidly, like Texas is right now, you deserve a one.
Well, I want to go to a couple of those comments you just made, but let me go to a couple people as well here. Dorman, first of all, I put a little Baylor on the left there, another red hot team that is, you know, could be in the one seed discussion, but for Texas and Kansas being in front of them.
Yeah, they're playing tremendous. They got West Virginia tonight. They're up slim in late first half. But again, look at that resume. They've beaten Kansas, Gonzaga. UCLA is on the two line these days. There's just, like you said, and Joby said, they're just piling up tier one wins, and they just keep coming and coming. They got a tough road trip coming up, going to Kansas and Kansas State after tonight, and then Texas at home. It never lets up in this conference, but I love Baylor's resume, and I think at the end of the day, this will be a protected seed.
Right. Oh, they'll be a protected seed.
I want to mention protected seed, because Joby mentioned 6 protected seeds. It's Sleeka. The team on the right there is TCU, and that might not be – that's the one of the 6 who may no longer be in that realm here. 3 losses in a row for the Frogs.
Well, I think there's 2 teams that are starting to look a little perilous as far as a protected seed goes, and TCU more so just because of their – injury situation with Mike Miles. They haven't looked as great since about 2 weeks ago when they lost at Mississippi State. And if you look at what they've done during the past week or so, they have, I think, 3 losses in a row now when you look at Oklahoma State, Kansas State, and now Baylor at home. There are some winnable road games as they get towards the end of the year with Texas Tech and Oklahoma, but if they lose those games, they may end up slipping from a protected seed down to more of a first ballot kind of team. Because if you look at the standings, Oklahoma State's actually past TCU now.
Yeah, and
Oklahoma
Tytel
State is on a rampage.
To Tytel, how about this Oklahoma State team? Yeah, believe this might be the hottest team in the Big 12, which is amazing to say.
It is, especially because they started 3-5 in conference play. They've won 7 of 8 with only a road loss at Texas. They beat TCU at home. They beat Iowa State on the road. Each of their next 5 are against top 25 KenPom teams, starting with Kansas coming to Stillwater on Tuesday. The X factor I see it is actually in the injury news. So Musa Cisse had an ankle injury. He's from Guinea. Not New Guinea, just regular Guinea. And the Cowboys have played 12 games since New Year's Day. When he's healthy, they're 8-0. When he's not, they're 0-4, which is why I have them as an 11 seed. He is the X factor.
Yeah, he is. Griggs, how about the West Virginia team, though, which is the other, if you want to say it's a bubble team or whatever in this conference, I don't think they are, but they can look so good and then so bad on back-to-back nights.
Yeah, I when they lose, they don't mess around, or they didn't the other night. It was just
Texas. It was awful. Yeah,
Texas just blew them to the moon. Tonight they've been a little more competitive with Baylor. I don't think they have it in them to win it, Baylor. And I've made this assessment before. I think they're clearly a top 40 team. I think they're clearly that good, somewhere between 30 and 40. But the problem is, they play so many games in league against teams that are top 20 or better that they just can't get the wins. And do they win the night? Probably not. Texas Tech, they can probably get that. I mean, they might only win one more the rest of the way. And is that good enough to get them in, even if they are a top 40 caliber team? And I would venture to say that the real committee won't take them. I'll defer to Tytel on that. But if they finish the year with just one more win, which is plausible, is that enough? I don't think it's anywhere close.
You're looking at then what are you? You're looking at 5 conference wins overall, and 5-13 in conference. I mean, Tytel, you can't take them, can you?
I'm leaning no. I'll defer to Joby because the JNG of 35 seems right along those lines. But like the fact is, if you lose to Texas Tech, that's bad. If you lose the other top 30 net games, I don't think it's a huge mark against you, even though the number of games below 500, I get it.
I don't think they make it at that point, but I don't think they're only going to win one more game. I think they're going to – call them a home court hero. I would pencil them in to win that Oklahoma State game, even as on fire as Oklahoma State's been. And to pick off probably maybe Kansas State or a team like that. They finished 3-3 down the stretch with even – and then at that point they get Oklahoma or Texas Tech in the first round and lose that game unexpectedly. I think even that will get you 3-4 down the stretch, gets you in if you're West Virginia.
Yeah, I've been looking at my magic number on them, 7-11. Get to that, yeah. I think they'll be okay.
Yeah, Matt, maybe it's the Iowa State game also. They just beat Iowa State this past week, and Iowa State is also starting to say, well, maybe we're not a protected seed.
Yeah, no, I think, yeah, they've got opportunities. I think, like, I would bet on them getting to at least 7-11 to make the tournament. I think one win is fairly fatalistic. But that sounds like a Pittsburgh fan speaking.
They're already 7-5. That is a very safe bet. I will also take that bet.
No, he's talking about West Virginia.
Oh, he is. I'm sorry. Okay, sorry. Go ahead, Matt. I misunderstood the team.
Oh, no, that's what I'm saying. Like I think, yeah, predicting one win down the stretch is fatalistic. I think the realist is if they went 2-4, I guess by viable losses they'd get left out, but boy, that'd be an interesting case. And like, I always kind of want to see that. If they go 2-4, then maybe 1-1 in the Big 12 tournament.
It would be interesting here. Here's the upcoming schedule in the Big 12. And
this upcoming schedule, I believe Stillwater, I believe Iba Arena is already full. I don't know when the last time Stillwater was this pumped for a game.
Yeah, we've got Kansas awesome. At Oklahoma State. We've got TCU at Iowa State. By the way, we've got Baylor at Kansas on Saturday. By the way, we've got Iowa State at K-State. This is just ridiculous. Next week, we've got Kansas at TCU on Monday night, and Oklahoma State at West Virginia. These two teams we just discussed going head to head. It's a ridiculous conference. It's ridiculous records. And let's just move on here, though. Stalika, the Big East. You're the Xavier guy. You've gone on 2 road trips this year to see Xavier games. DePaul and Butler, I don't think you're allowed to go again.
To be fair, I've been on 3 road trips. One of them was the Crosstown Shootout at Cincinnati. But Yes.
That's not really a Big East trip. Come on. I mean, a
as far as the Big East, we're probably going to have to table it for a while. And this was a team that ended up getting off to a very slow start. You could swear they were stuck in traffic in Indianapolis, ending up down 19-5 in a heartbeat. Now, granted, they did make up a lot of that at the beginning of the second half with a 9-0 run, but even then they were treading water against a Butler team that only went six deep. So 18 turnovers in that game was just a killer. And they also got a bit of another injury scare with Sule Boom having a bit of a bum ankle. He did finish the game, and as far as I know, is still on track to be in the lineup Wednesday at Marquette, but that would be a huge loss for the Musketeers if he's not able to go forward. Replacing Zach Fremantle has been one thing which they've been doing game to game. You cannot replace what Sule Boom has brought to the table this year.
Yeah, and their next game here, coming another huge game this week, they're at Marquette. And Tytel and Matt, I want to ask you both about them because, Matt, you're a Marquette guy. But, Tytel, let me start with you. I think you got a chance to see them at Georgetown this weekend, right?
I did. And like most teams that play Georgetown, I saw them win. They destroyed the Hoyas. It was close in the second half, but, I mean, Shaka has them going. They've won 14 of 17. Xavier coming to town Wednesday, so I'd love to hear those guys talk about the upcoming game. The offense remains unstoppable. 60% from two-point range is number one in the nation. I have them as a four seed, and I don't see them dropping too much farther unless they have I don't think them dropping farther than a four seed unless they completely fall apart.
And Matt, you are the Marquette guy, and this is your week. Home Xavier at Creighton.
It's a week away
for the Creighton game, but yeah.
Yeah, it's, but this week I think this is where you beat Xavier, and I think I said that probably would lock up a four seed, barring like multiple stub toes, which they Marquette has not really gotten close to doing that so far this year. Unlike past seasons, but no, I think we're trying to bring the positive vibes. We're forgetting the past and that. And I think it's a grab ticks where, yeah, Xavier, no Fremantle. Sule Boob's not going to be hard. He'll play, but he's not going to be 100% of that. Have fun playing that pressure defense Marquette can throw out there. So, a great opportunity for Marquette to get a win Wednesday, get back into the top 10. And then, yeah, it's going to be a real tough chip in Omaha. But, hey, that's what I think the action is going to be for the conference title. If Marquette protects home court, I think that game at Creighton will be for the conference title. It might even be for the outright title.
Yeah, and Dorman, it's kind of interesting. Not in the conference title race at all, but this UConn team has the best net in the conference. Interesting 1-1 week for them as well, beating Marquette, losing to Creighton.
Yeah, they were. They played well in Creighton. They fell just short. Seton Hall and Providence on deck coming up at home. I still really believe this is a dangerous team come March. You don't want to see them in your bracket because of all the firepower they have. I think Curley has weathered the downtick, and they will. They're formidable. The UConn is really strong. The rest of the schedule is pretty easy. They had it front loaded. So here comes the wins. I'd be surprised if they did anything but win until that last game against Villanova. And a quick one on Villanova, and then I'll let it go, is Villanova, watch out for Villanova. They're finally getting healthy. They're not going to make a run, obviously, for the regular season. But in the Garden, they're going to be desperate. And they're going to finally be healthy and at full strength. Villanova is a dangerous team in the Big East tournament.
Okay, fair point. I pulled up Seton Hall here on the right, and Griggs, I got to go to you because this team is now 14-11 versus D1. Two losses in a row, 0-2 last two games. Yet, as of this morning, you thought this was an NCAA tournament team.
Well, yeah, it is a 68-team field. I didn't particularly like them. As much, the rules say you have to take 68, Chad. I mean,
yeah, you put four teams in below them also. So,
did you see the four that are below them?
You didn't even have them in Dayton.
Wow.
I thought it was your best bracket you've done all season, other than that. But, you know, hey.
Yeah, but, you know, at Kansas, at Creighton, some at Marquette, you can sort of like when you're talking. In the range of the bracket where I had them, the 10 to the 12 line, nobody in that range would win those games anyway.
But they would beat Siena, and they would beat Oklahoma, and they would.
Yeah, they would beat Siena. They would win at home. Perhaps Oklahoma, and
they've got at UConn, they've got Xavier at home, they've got a game at Providence. They still have chances. I'll give them that. But let's move
on. It's not like
here.
I liked them. It's just that it's a 68 team tournament, and they want to make it a 90 team tournament. They're insane.
We mentioned the game of the week is Xavier at Marquette on Wednesday. There's the rest of the schedule, including Big Creighton Providence game, among others. But
is Xavier going to beat DePaul this time, Stalica?
I will say this, though. The last time they lost at DePaul, they got slapped in the face, and they responded with their best half of the year against UConn and managed to survive for that one. We can only hope to get off to a much better start at Marquette than they did against Butler.
I don't know. I'd rather Xavier and Providence just play every week because it's always awesome.
Let's move on here. Joby, your conference, the ACC, you're the Virginia guy, and you guys beat NC State. And then technically it's a win over Duke, although nobody believes they should have won.
Well, except for the fact that it drives me nuts, Chad. No one brought up Grayson Allen over and over again on his four-step travel. I find it humorous that Duke says we were robbed after.
Yeah.
I think everybody in the conference says about time. But
when is the ACC going to get its foot off of Duke's throat?
I mean, for goodness sakes. But and 2 points, this is the homer points, but they are true. 6.5 seconds to throw the ball in. Yeah, it took 6.5 seconds to throw the ball in. They didn't review that. But it's been confirmed 6.5 seconds. That's Virginia should have had a chance to win with 1.2. And you can see clearly from the Duke sideline bench that was a clean block and Dunn never touched him. So it wasn't a foul, but they called the foul. So the review was done poorly. They did basically I think they looked at the review, thought Beekman had committed the foul, and they go, oh crap, no, that didn't happen. And so they made up this Fakakta, oh, Dunn was the one we're calling on, even though Dunn didn't touch him either. That's like, we'll call it on that. And so they got out of the two wrongs make a right sort of situation.
Well, the ACC admitted afterwards, though, that it was the wrong call, that they did not apply the rule correctly.
That's not how you
should have been shooting free throws, yes.
If you're going to say it was a foul, which it wasn't, but if you're going to say it was a foul, then he should have had the free throws. But remember this, two things. Filipowski was 0-for-6 that day and 0-for-1 from the free throw line. So he couldn't hit the broadside of the barn. So there was no guarantee he wasn't going to give the crowd bacon. And then on the other end is Duke still could have won it in overtime and they fell flat on their face. So, I'm not really that upset. You shouldn't.
Oh, I'm devastated.
Give Duke credit for making it a tight game in Charlottesville. But what this win did for Virginia in the big picture is it set Virginia on a course to be the favorite to win the regular season title. They've got an at Chapel Hill game in North Carolina, especially after tonight. It's going to be desperate. But besides that, Virginia should win every game left. They've got the easy part of their schedule left. They got the two Louisville games. They got Notre Dame. They got Boston College. Virginia's gone through the tougher part of their ACC, the NCAA tournament team, so to speak, as Griggs would say, of the schedule are done. And so, and Pitt, which we'll talk about, still has some tricky road games at Miami, at Virginia Tech, two games I think they'll lose given the venues. And so Virginia has the inside track, but Pitt, we'll get someone else I'm sure wants to talk about him. Got to give him a lot of credit, and I'll let whoever you have lined up talk.
Yeah, Tytel, how about this Pitt team?
They've lost one game in the past month. The amazing part is that it was at home to freaking Florida State. The more amazing part is that their best player, John Hughley IV, announced last month he's sitting out the rest of the season with a knee injury and mental health issues. But Coach Jeff Capel, I mean, I think he's a strong contender for ACC Coach of the Year. 21 losses last year. He's got a good chance to finish this month with 21 wins, which is why I have them as a 10 seed.
Yeah, I'm loving the way this Pitt team is playing right now. And I was one of the last people to get on the bandwagon here. But the rest of the conference, and Matt, we got to discuss North Carolina. Another loss tonight, this time at home. Yes, it was to Miami, but you can't afford these losses when you have beaten nobody that's going to make the field other than a home win over NC State.
Yeah, I'm going to circle right now that average or that Q1 wins, and there's zero there, nothing. And that there's, I can't see, even with all their, it's weird, it's like all their metrics still say tournament team. Now, I guess that's going into today, and that not taking a home loss to Miami, who's a good team, although not as high in the metrics, predictive metrics as they are in the resume ones, but still, that's nothing there. Like, you can't take a team that has nothing in Q1.
Yeah, I don't see it, especially with this loss. I think that this is one of those games they needed. It was of their three remaining home games, this was their easy one. Virginia and Duke are their other two games. Greg, I know you're dying to say something here.
Well, can we talk about Syracuse?
No, we can't.
Well, if we can talk about North Carolina, then why can't we talk about Syracuse? They're equally as relevant here, Jeff.
Dorman.
Boston College, can we discuss
Let's
that?
Talk about a team with North Carolina the name, but how about the other North Carolina team? NC State sitting here with a tournament-caliber resume, I think.
Absolutely. I got them in the tournament today. I think they're pretty safe, again, minus a total nosedive. They've done probably enough to get them through the Duke game, the Duke win and the Miami game, both at home, but I don't care. They're impressive. Duke was a blowout, was never even a game in the Miami win. It looks better and better by the day because I'm real high on this Miami team. But overall, this conference does not look strong to me. I love Miami and I love Virginia. I know a lot of you guys around Pitt. I'm not so sold yet. I could be. But the ACC overall, again, another down year.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. This Miami win here, Miami just beat the net 40 team on the road tonight.
And it'll be a
I expect
one.
This to become a tier one win tomorrow morning. Yeah. I expect Miami to be able to move up those four spots they need to make that into a tier one win.
Yeah, Tytel, I realize when you do your brackets, you're not doing what most of the rest of us are doing. You're trying to guess the actual committee. You keep selecting North Carolina, presumably because you think the committee will. Will the committee really select North Carolina? Or are you just messing with me?
Can't it be both? I mean, no, I think that I was pulling from last year and you were against it. And obviously, I'm not saying that making the championship game justifies making the tournament because that's not how it works. If they lose out, which they could, then obviously they're going to slide. I mean, they're 11 and clutching for dear life. But like, I like the chance, like Chad said, that they have chances. They obviously have to make the most of them, but I would not write them off just yet.
Here's a factor to remember. Two words, Bubba Cunningham. He sits on the committee. They got a higher seed than most people thought they get last year. Don't tell me he's not in the room and all. That has an effect.
Okay, last year
it most certainly does.
Last year they had a protected seeded win on the road, and I think after they did that, all of us were like, yeah, they're eight.
Now, well, they're in, we didn't say they were an eight seed.
Okay, yeah. we are running higher.
They need to do work. They need to win Virginia. You know, they need to win NC State on the road. You know, they can't just.
Yeah, if they do that,
But if they do that, they're still going. You're going to be still saying they beat Virginia at home. They go. You'll still be saying, well, where's the road win? And well, here's the thing: is I think that is where they will get the benefit of the doubt, right or wrong, with such a win, you know, with a Duke and Virginia win or something like that, or, you know, the NC State road win later this week. Now, if they don't get any of those three and all they beat is Notre Dame and Florida State, yeah, they're not going in, but they aren't as far out as you think they are.
Okay, we really need to move on here. We are running very, very long on this show here. So for those of you looking for a one-hour show, I think we got about an hour and a half show tonight already. But just a quick note here, upcoming games, other than the North Carolina-NC State game we just talked about, kind of circle this pit at Virginia Tech game Saturday as well. Vontech's still in striking distance, but Salika, the game you're watching this Saturday is at Georgia Tech. Am I correct?
Florida Tech at Georgia Tech?
Georgia Tech steps out of conference this weekend for a little non-conference tilt.
That sounds more like a whack fill-in opponent right there.
Wow.
UCF, USF used to be Florida Tech, just as a note.
No, this is a different Florida Tech. Who knows what this Florida Tech? I know Ty Teledorman, you don't want to do it, but we've got to hit all these conferences. Over the weekend, Arizona goes on the easy road trip to Cal and Stanford, picks up a nice commanding win at Cal, and then they go to Stanford. Dorman, what the hell happened to your team?
Guard play let them down. Sloppy with the ball, too many turnovers, bad shots, and Stanford probably played their – definitely played their best game of the year. They finally knocked down some shots. Arizona, I love the big guys. I like the down. I like the play down low. But in March, I love guards, and I think it's gonna. As of right now, it's letting them down. And Curve Carissa is taking shots that are out of control that he shouldn't be, and turning the ball over left and right.
Matt, the Southern Cal teams went to the Oregon schools this week, and UCLA came up with a 2-0 sweep, and USC. I get losing at Oregon, but you totally crap on your profile by losing at Oregon State.
Yeah, that was not a good decision. That was let's try to make Selection Sunday a whole lot more nerve wracking than it had to be, because that took them. We had them on like the 9-10 line on the Thursday show. They're right on the cut line now. Like really, one or two out. Like that was bad loss, bad decision.
Negative still Ghost Rider, the pattern is full.
Stalika. And there's only one opportunity left, too.
Yeah. Stalika, Oregon does get the win over USC as well. Very easy schedule remaining here. A chance to get up to 20 wins heading into the Pac-12 tournament. Is it time to start talking about the Ducks? Seriously?
I would have talked about the Ducks a little more seriously had they been able to pull out the home win against UCLA right here. If they can sweep this road trip, which is never a guarantee, and then you sweep the homestand against Stanford, then you're setting yourself up for the Pac-12 tournament, where if you get one win, maybe two wins, then you're at least going to be seriously on the table.
You look at their metrics; they're right there in the 40s. So 50 net, 47 JNG. These are numbers that say we're in striking distance, and where all these other bubble teams are going to be picking up losses. Griggs,
yeah,
Oregon should be picking up wins, even if they're against bad teams.
Right, and you know, three of those wins on the road, they should have a big head of steam going in, and they might enter the conference tournament not inside the bubble, but in a position to where they can get there without winning the auto bid.
Right. And Titel, I think you want to discuss Utah. Are they still in contention here?
Yes, and it's because of that top game on the remaining schedule. They already have a 15-point win over my Wildcats this year. If they somehow sweep us in Tucson on Thursday, it's going to get a little dicey, because they'll tie us in the standings and have two games up on us in terms of the head-to-head. I think we'll win. Like the only upside of the Stanford loss, and it's very hard to find one, is that we are not going to overlook Utah. We're going to be angry. So I think we're going to win, but we'll see.
Yeah. And Utah kind of the opposite of Oregon. Oregon has five games they should win. Utah has four resume building games, maybe even five. Colorado has a solid net at 71 at least, but do something here.
Yeah, I've been really underwhelmed by the Utes. Yeah. Here's their chance to overwhelm me if they can win all those.
The upcoming schedule, real quick. I think the games are Utah's game at Arizona. I think that is probably the game of the week in this conference, unless I'm missing something, but I don't think I am. Let's move on to
Oregon
the
State, Washington. Let's move on.
And Matt, West Coast Conference. St. Mary's fell from the ranks of undefeated in conference play this week with a almost stunning loss at Loyola Marymount. Now, I get Loyola Marymount already won at Gonzaga, but they've been playing awful since then.
Shout out to former Marquette assistant Stan Johnson at LMU with the they got wins over the first two. They've got the top of their resume is good. The rest of the resume, well, they're 17-10, 7-6. So we're talking about maybe getting to the CBI. But man, that impressive win. Like, just because they beat Gonzaga earlier, that probably gives St. Mary's thought where like They're not going to totally free fall down the bracket, but I will say that might have knocked them out of contention for protected seed, barring winning out and winning the WCC tourney.
And Dorman, Gonzaga gets a 2-0 week. BYU at home always gives them trouble, and that happened again this year, but they found a way to win.
They found a way to win, exactly. BYU always gives them trouble. BYU was strong in the first half. Gonzaga pulled it out down the stretch. Most brackets still have Gonzaga pretty much ahead of St. Mary's in the bracket, and that widened with St. Mary's loss over the weekend. And I think Matt's biggest point is St. Mary's was looking and gunning for a protected seed, but that loss really hurts them. Without that win in Gonzaga, I think St. Mary's will not be a top four seed.
Right. And I think at this point, all we have left to do in the West Coast is wait for that that regular season finale. Unless Titan, exactly. You want to talk about something like Santa Clara.
Briefly. So like per usual, they've already been swept by Gonzaga and St. Mary's, but per unusual, they've beaten a Big East team. They've beaten a Pac-12 team. They beat Boise by 15. They beat Rick Pitino by double digits. Like, that's a quality little resume with several winnable games left. So they should get a 3 seed in the conference tourney. Any other year, that's what you want. You don't want to be the 4 seed and have to deal with the Zags, who are, like, front and center. Of course, this year, with St. Mary's exceeding expectations, they might face Gonzaga in the 2-3 game.
I do have to take issue. They said they beat a Big East team. They beat DePaul.
Yeah. They beat Cal. That's the Pac-12 team.
but no, it is a great point, though.
I like what Santa Clara has done. They're not going to get inside the bubble, but this program is trending up, as is LMU, albeit not recently.
The one game this conference to watch this week is probably the BYU at St. Mary's game, but
yeah,
just because it's a little bit interesting at least. But
right, this conference has always had a feel of being a hybrid of under the radar and over the radar. It's becoming solidly, exclusively over the radar, and we got to move on. I know.
Great, so we're moving on here. Houston gets a 2-0 week in the American, beating Tulsa by 1-0 week. They only played one game, and they just pounded Tulsa in their one game they played.
Yeah, and you know, Tulsa did some things that were probably annoying. There were a couple times where they scored on Houston, but other than
okay,
that,
we're moving on already. Stalika, Memphis picks up a nice 2-0 week with a road win at South Florida and a home win over a game Temple team that's been playing very well lately.
Yeah, suddenly they have the sweep against Temple, which is looking a lot better. You look at a team like Tulane, for example; they're still miles away from the bubble, but can certainly be a noisemaker in the American tournament in a couple of weeks. Let's move on.
Matt, this Memphis team.
We got to talk about this. Yeah,
yeah. I think that they are on the right side of the bubble, but they got to play Houston twice still.
Yeah, I would strongly advise them win one of those. Win the 1-3-5 at home last Sunday of the regular season. Win that. Take care of your business there. I think that circular chip. If they win the other four and lose those two, they might be on the right side of the bubble, but it'd be not making life very easy for them much the next day. It would put it in the hands of the committee, I think. So that's where I said, get the 1 March 5th at home. I mean, you win at Houston, hey, that removes all doubt. But yeah. Realistically, the 1 March 5th at home, that's the one, their chance.
Holy crap. This is the farewell tour to the Big 12 right here. Look at the remaining home schedule. UCF, UC, Houston.
Yeah.
Yeah. Titel, Tulane has a chance to have a very interesting fact on its resume. They could, if they win at Houston next week, have wins at Houston and at Memphis, and in fact, a sweep over Memphis. Is there any shot here for this team?
Winning at Houston would certainly help. I mean, the green wave, I think, is flowing at low tide at the moment. They've had overtime in 4 of their past 5 games. They're exhausted. The good news, they won 3 of the 4. They beat Cincinnati at home last week and scored 101. And for those of you who think the key to winning close games is free throw shooting, duh, you're right. Tulane is 80% from the line, number 4 in the nation. They're outside the bubble, but they do have a chance at the miracle next week.
The game of the week this week is Sunday, Memphis at Houston in the American. One of the top games in the conference this season, probably. But, Joby, I've been saving an entire conference for you, so I'll just let you end the show right here. It's all yours. I know it's your favorite.
My evil plan to give it a one bid for the Mountain West almost came home on Friday night if Fresno had actually held on and beaten Nevada. But the but the bubble teams, I mean, San Diego State has solidified themselves, especially winning on the road at Utah State. But that was big for the conference because somebody's got to go in. So Utah State, when you combine it with their loss to San Jose State, has kind of fallen from, hey, bubble, and now they're way out. You know, they're a dozen teams in front of Utah State after the loss to San Jose State. Likewise, New Mexico, I know they are missing one of their top players, but you lose to Air Force, that's a problem. I mean, that is a huge problem. New Mexico is clinging to a bid right now. And that's not just me saying it. That's where I think they honestly are. Likewise, Boise has nothing. You know, I've been put Boise and North Carolina's resumes side by side, and you go, oh my God. The only reason Boise might have a few is because of inflated nets in the NWC. Boise has nothing. They're not a very good team. I mean, they're going to lose. I'm confident they're going to lose. But I will give a props to Nevada. Nevada has looked good lately. They've been winning on the road, which is still tough, even in the Mountain West.
Very tough.
You look at Nevada and San Diego State, I see, while I think San Diego State plays sloppy, I think you have two solid tournament teams. Those two teams, I think, will rise up just looking at the eye, looking at the way those teams are playing right now. I think we're looking at two, maybe three, if there's an upset in the tournament teams. I do think you're going to see upsets occur, though, for the others, because they just New Mexico and Boise aren't really that good, and they're susceptible to losing that, you know, at Colorado State for Boise. That's a landmine for them. At San Jose State, just like for Utah State, landmine. And at Utah State, I mean, that's trouble for Boise. New Mexico, likewise, needs to get it together. I'm sure they'll win it against Wyoming, who's awful at home. But then the rest of the schedule gets kind of tricky and dicey for New Mexico. So those two are the teams to watch if you were fellow bubble mates like those SEC schools, like those like Texas A&M and Kentucky and Mississippi State. Like if you're Clemson, North Carolina. Yeah, if you're in that crowd, look to the Mountain West, and you're not going to like what you see when Nevada wins a lot, but these other two could be in trouble by the time March rolls around.
Right. Yeah, New Mexico tops out with that win at St. Mary's. Just real quick, Chad, one of the things I wanted to point out is just how fierce the front range is. It is so intense that they are so emotionally drained.
Okay, we got to move on here. Here's the upcoming schedule, the key games in the conference. Maybe Nevada, Utah State, a tough road test for them. San Diego State has got a road game at Fresno as well. And that Nevada team, where are they? I said they're at Utah State. I guess that's their only game they've got. But one other team we got to briefly discuss here is the Florida Atlantic Owls. Welcoming them back onto the Hoops HD Report. They did crack back into the top 25 Stalika this week, at least in the AP poll, off of a 2-0 week. And really, they've got five regular season games left. They got to win all five of them, correct?
And so this week, they get the sweep of Rice and Louisiana Tech. They'll face them again towards the end of the regular season right here. Now they're your only game upcoming this week is going to be at Middle Tennessee. And after that one, then they get the Texas schools at home to finish their home schedule.
Yeah, and that's an interesting game, though, Dorman, on the last game of the season. Louisiana Tech took them to overtime at home this week.
Yeah. And I agree with Stalika. There is no room for error. They've got to win the next four. And then I agree with you, Chad. In Louisiana Tech, last game, senior day, Louisiana Tech will be ready and excited for that game. It'll be a top 25 team coming to town. But Florida Atlantic cannot afford any slip-ups before the conference tournament.
Well, let me ask you this. If they do lose one of these games, let's say that Louisiana Tech game, and then lose in the conference tournament finals, is there a path now with four losses?
It'll be very, very close. My gut says they'll just miss. if that's the scenario.
I think missed. Rice might get Rice because they have already beaten North Texas as well. Rice might also equal Louisiana Tech.
Okay, I think they lose one of the two, though, Joby.
I think they lose one of the two, and it's North Texas, not even UAB. And it's North Texas they lose to, who is a solid NIT team.
Yeah.
I think they are still in because all you have to do is look at the rest of the bubble. They are better than what the rest of the bubble is. And I don't see those bubble teams. We're talking about Oregon and teams like that. I don't see those teams taking advantage of their opportunities because they haven't yet.
On that note, I am going to move right over to final thoughts here because we are way long in this show. Tytel, I'm going to keep the screecher up and go to you first because you want to talk about this young woman.
So it's been a great month for Philly sports. You got my Penn Quakers winning 5 in a row. They're one game behind Yale and Princeton for the top of the conference. The 76ers have won 11-14. And, of course, our girl, Villanova guard Maddie Segrist, the only men's or women's D1 player this year to score 50 in a game, which she had in a huge win over Seton Hall last weekend. She set a single-game Big East scoring record. And with 1,550 career points in conference games, she's the new career scoring leader in Big East games as well. Chad, any other Philly sports stories I missed this month?
Not that I remember. Yes, you did. Pitchers and catchers report for the Phillies Thursday. So spring training's right around the corner, defending National League champions. That's the other story you missed. Nothing else. Let's go to the rest of you here. Dorman.
I'm going to give you four teams that are going to be very desperate and very hungry come conference tournament time that also, I believe, have the talent to make a deep run in their conference and maybe give some other bubble teams a long weekend. Michigan in the Big Ten, Villanova in the Big East, Oregon in the Pac-12. They are probably the closest team to making the field without this, and Virginia Tech in the ACC. Four teams that will be hungry and desperate next month.
Absolutely, and I like that Oregon mentioned there. I'm a little bit higher than I think Griggs was on them right now, too. Matt.
So I'm looking to see come March Madness. We'll see with the selection of teams, and that's where I like seeing the qualitative metrics, the KPI, and the JNG, which is even though it's kind of like trying to predict what's happened, I think it's every bit the equal of the KPI and stakes the record. But then we come to seed times. That's why I really like the predictive metrics. So that's where I like we look at the debate to start tonight. Credit with credit there. I think Creighton should be like a 4 or 5 seed right now just because they're so strong in the predictive metrics to where, like, I think seeding them lower, I think that's almost unfair to now, forget the first-round opponent, but even the second-round opponent. Man, like, I wouldn't want to be a 2 or 3 seed seeing Creighton as my 6 or 7 right now. And I'm hoping that's where we can use our numbers to where, hey, what happened out in the court, let's use that so, like, teams like Penn and Northwestern should be in this field. But then when we look at something like Creighton, who's in the basically top 10 or 12 of all the metrics, get them seated like they should be.
Right. Absolutely. Salika.
I have to give a shout out to former Vanderbilt and Xavier star Brian Thornton. He ended up finishing his career with the Musketeers back in 2006 and also had a brief coaching career. He's had, shall we say, a pretty tough job of late. As of 2021, he's been the commissioner of the WAC. The program, well, the conference has improved on the basketball court, obviously, with the notable exception of what has happened in New Mexico State. So I can only imagine how he and the rest of the conference is going to be handling that mess going forward. But do not let that detract from what has been otherwise a great season in the WAC when you look at teams like Utah Valley, Seattle, and Sam Houston.
Well, it's already taken care of. Mexico State's out of the conference after the season anyhow. Yeah. So that's the good news for them. Joby.
Preseason, you had Sports Illustrated and CBS both list a top 5 coaches on the hot seat. 3 coaches were on both lists. Those 3 coaches were Chris Collins at Northwestern, Kevin Keats at NC State, and Brad Brownell at Clemson. Well, 2 of those are looking really good for a bid, and the other has a legit shot to try to play their way in. Maybe that's the secret for Patrick Ewing, who was only on 1 of those 2 lists. He needed to be on both, and then maybe Georgetown would have actually made that run like those others.
There we go. Greg, you want to finish us off?
Yeah, more rumblings. I'll just be real quick. We don't want to see a 90 or a 96 team NCAA tournament. It ruins the fun of the regular season. How exciting is it to come on here each week and talk about the games that are important and why they're important and to have stakes? So I just hope that the transformation committee can see that, and that it wouldn't be good for the game to basically double the size of the field and add 30 games onto it that are essentially nothing more than more first four games. And under the radar on Wednesday night, check it, you know, be sure and check us out for that.
So with regard to 96 teams, instead of Sleeka just happening to mention the good seasons that Utah Valley and Sam Houston have, we'd have them on this show debating whether they're on the bubble or not. So
this show would be 4 hours long.
Yeah, but I do want to at this point in time take a chance to thank everybody for joining us. As Greg said, we'll be back Wednesday night with Under the Radar, Thursday night with a Bracket Rundown show. But for David Griggs, John Sleeka, John Tytel in the center square, David Dorman, Matt Sikowski decides, Joby Forza down there with Alf and Shadow Stevens, I'm Chad Sherwood. Thanks for joining us. Talk to you again real soon.